The Israel Report with Rolene Marks.
Rolene Marks, good morning on this very, very difficult morning. How are you?
Good morning. I think our hearts are collectively broken as we look at what happened in Texas this morning. It is just absolutely beyond comprehension. And I know it seems like empty words, but I think our hearts and our prayers are sincerely with those families who have now lost 19 children and 3 adults. There just are no words. Only profound, profound sorrow.
Absolutely right. No words either for CNN, who are now reporting that Israel deliberately targeted Abu Akleh. No.
Oh, I don't know how it would up, but plenty of words. None of these are light enough to say.
It's a family show, Rolene. Seriously, CNN deciding that Israel deliberately targeted Abu Akleh? Have they no shame? Well, tell us about the story.
Clearly, they have no shame. So, of course, this is the big story in Israel across all the newspapers this morning. A CNN investigation, in inverted commas, says that Israel deliberately shot Shirin Abu Akleh. Now, I just want to make one thing clear, that at the outset, as soon as news of this broke, the IDF said they will be opening up an investigation, which is still ongoing. It's an operational investigation, not one conducted by the military police, but there is one still underway. The other thing is the IDF said it's possible we could have shot the fatal bullet in the melee. There was a heavy exchange of gunfire. Now, CNN are saying that they have eyewitness testimony. Now, if I recall back 2 weeks ago when the story broke, before we knew of any journalist being killed, the story was IDF troops under heavy gunfire exchange in the city of Jenin. So I want you, as a working journalist, put that out there, because those were the reports that we were getting in on the wires coming from Jenin. Then the horrible news broke. But don't worry, Howard listeners, CNN, the Associated Press, and all the media have this absolutely wonderful ability to not only report the news, but they can also magically conduct ballistics testing without the actual bullet and the autopsy without being an actual coroner. It is unbelievable the multitasking that they can do. So this is what they base their conclusions on. They had a forensic expert lift the audio, not the video, the audio from the footage. Now, I know, you know, many of us who are on social media know that the footage was immediately circulated on social media, and it was very clear that there was an exchange of gunfire. They've released just the audio, conveniently not the video as well. Second of all, they have brought in Chris Cobb-Smith. He's a security consultant and British Army veteran who looked at photos of bullet markings left on a tree. Now, if I was in the studio, I would actually say to Mr. Cobb-Smith, but you don't have custody of the bullet, or you haven't seen the actual bullet, have you? Or seen ballistics results? And I'm sure any lawyer, any journalist, anyone with half a brain would ask the same question as well. So he says, the number of strike marks on the tree where Shireen was standing proves this wasn't a random shot. She was targeted. Noting that evidence of Palestinian fire during the exchanges show random sprays. So now that contradicts their original story that says there was no exchange of gunfire. Cut to their witness. Now, of course, as an Israeli journalist, we're going to do what every other journalist does. We're going to look for the receipts. And Aviva Klompas has managed to pull up the social media postings of the eyewitness, whose name is Shatta Hanaisha, who says that she dreams of rockets of the resistance, and that whatever is happening in Jenin is a reminder of our rights to this country. Whoever sacrifices his life for the sake of the homeland just sticks a knife in the heart of the occupation. Now, that doesn't sound very impartial to me, Howard and listeners.
It doesn't sound very journalistic, no.
It doesn't sound very journalistic at all, but we have this now coming from CNN. But don't worry, everybody. The Associated Press are also experts in ballistics and conducting autopsies, and are also military professionals, because they've reenacted the whole incident. However, their conclusion is that while the RDF still shot her, it wasn't deliberate. Now, we've had numerous confirmations coming from the RDF saying that they will get to the truth. It could be them, it could also not be them. They are still waiting for the bullet to send to ballistics. We've heard from our ambassador to the United States, Michael Herzog, who also said that the fact that there is a verdict reached before any investigations are concluded is absolutely irresponsible and smacks of an agenda. I mean, it is just absolutely astounding, and conveniently left out of the whole melee is why the RDF were conducting counter-terror operations there in the first place. I mean, I am just astounded. And as you can imagine, there is a lot of outcry coming from Israel this morning, and especially the Israeli media, because we were covering these events as they unfolded. Naturally, nobody has come to speak to any of us.
It's just incredible. The problem is that it builds layers upon layers upon layers that are very, very hard to peel away. And even if in 3 months' time something comes out to show that this was irresponsible, the impression is already formed. And I wonder if people will even be able to, if this will ever be reversed in terms of perception. And that's the danger here.
Absolutely, it's the danger. We've already had a U.S. Congresswoman, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, sitting on her social media speaking about U.S. military funding for the state of Israel and making very, very damaging statements like, your money is going, or U.S. money is going to fund the deliberate Israeli killing of a journalist, and therefore Americans cannot get access to healthcare. That is extremely inflammatory and dangerous, and takes us back to those very, very, very dangerous anti-Semitic stereotypes and tropes. You know, Jews control the systems. Jews control access to healthcare. But I just want to look at some statistics, and this is one coming in from the International Federation of Journalists that have published that between 1990 and 2020, which is a 10-year period, 2,658 journalists were killed in war zones. Syria, which is the deadliest war zone, has seen hundreds of journalists killed. Al Jazeera have had at least 12 journalists have been killed since 1990. Seven were killed in Syria, two in Iraq, one in Yemen, one in Libya, and the last one was Al-Aqla. 340 journalists killed in Iraq and hundreds in other parts of the world, including nearly 200 in Mexico. How many of us know the circumstances around that? And how many of those journalists, excluding the 23 journalists now killed in Ukraine, how many of us know the circumstances around this, any of their names,
or have any
of these journalists, including Daniel Pearl, deliberately kidnapped and murdered on camera, deliberately managed to convene an emergency session of the United Nations Security Council?
Well said, Rolly. Now you can just step off that soapbox a little bit, can we? but we wouldn't have it any other way, just so you know. U.S. sanctions Hamas money men. Tell us about this.
Well, this is also super interesting. You know, we always say follow the money. Mm-hmm. And of course, there has been a lot of discussion lately in the international community around Hamas. The United Kingdom as well as Australia have proscribed Hamas, which of course makes it illegal to support them, wave their flags, and very, very importantly, fund any of their activities in any way. So now the US Treasury Department have announced that they have sanctioned a Hamas official along with a whole network of backers or financial backers of the terror group. So this network, which is apparently overseen by Hamas's investment office, I mean, you can't make that up. Yes, they have an investment office. Which manages about $500 million in assets and includes companies that are based in Sudan, Turkey, Saudi Arabia, Algeria, the UAE, and various other places in the world. And so the US Treasury are clamping down, sanctioning not just the official who heads this, but all of the companies and individuals who are linked to these companies and to the funds. And the spokesperson for the Treasury Department says today's action targets the individuals and companies that Hamas uses to conceal and launder funds. Hamas has generated vast sums of revenue through its secret investment portfolio while destabilizing Gaza, which is facing harsh living and economic conditions. Hamas maintains a violent agenda that harms both Israelis and Palestinians, and the U.S. is committed to denying Hamas the ability to generate and move funds and holding them accountable for promoting and carrying out violence. So imagine using that $500 million, Howard, to, I don't know, maybe build a hospital, schools.
What is interesting as well, though, Rolene, is there was a lot of nervousness around the Biden administration, but they certainly haven't disappointed. They've been very resolute and quite clear on their support for Israel and their condemnation of terror.
Well, I think we have to be very, very careful. And I see it a lot, not just around the conversation about Israel, but a lot of conversations that the polarization in America seems to filter out everywhere around the world. And we have to look at things from a bigger perspective. Terror groups like Hamas don't just harm Israelis and Palestinians, they harm all Western democracies. We're all affected around the world by their type of activity. And, you know, people might have their opinions about the Biden administration or the previous administration, and of course, that's everybody's right. But we have to look at it from a different perspective. We in Israel look at it from the perspective that America is our strongest ally, and we will work with any administration. And yes, of course, we have various issues along the way. But make no mistake, we work very, very, very closely with the departments in the U.S. administration, the Department of Defense, the Department of Homeland Security, the Treasury, etc. And we share intelligence and we share information, and they are very, very well briefed about what goes on and how money is laundered and how it affects not just us, but them as well. They also have a vested interest in fighting terror around the world.
I think a very, very valid point indeed. The IRGC is to stay on the terror watch list.
Well, this was a big one that's come up for discussion, and this is one that Israel really, really has been working hard. So the IRGC is the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps. Now, there was some discussion a while ago that there was the possibility of the U.S. taking or delisting the IRGC from the international terror list, but it's come to pass that they will not be doing that at all. The IRGC will stay on the terror list. In fact, Prime Minister Bennett has spoken to President Biden, and he has shared a readout to the media. He says, President Biden is a true friend of Israel who is committed to its strength and security. And over the past few months, we have made our stance clear. The IRGC is the world's largest terror organization involved in planning and carrying out deadly acts of terror and destabilizing the Middle East. Now, we wouldn't be the only country to speak to the Biden administration about this. You would be pretty much guaranteed the Saudis, the Emiratis, and others would also have expressed their concern. And as we just mentioned a few minutes ago, sanctioning Hamas, clamping down on their funding, it is all tied back to Iran. Iran is the largest state sponsor of terror. Hamas is a proxy of Iran, as is Hezbollah and Palestinian Islamic Jihad. So, you know, this reach goes all the way up to the top.
Yeah. And it is at least a good decision. Finally, Turkish foreign minister in Israel, what can we expect?
Well, as we've been discussing over the past couple of months, ties between Israel and Turkey are warming up quite significantly. We just had the historical visit in March by our president to Ankara. And yesterday, the Turkish foreign minister, Mevlut Cavusoglu, arrived in the country. He is scheduled to meet with our foreign minister, Yair Lapid. And on the list of things to discuss will be the possible re-exchanging of ambassadors. If you go back to 2010, both countries pooled our ambassadors because ties took a significant downturn. He will also go to Yad Vashem, very, very important. And we think also up for discussion is a request from Israel to Turkey to clamp down on Hamas's presence in the country. The foreign minister will also visit the Temple Mount. However, that will be in a private capacity and he won't be accompanied by Israeli officials.
And that's all we have time for. Rolene Marks, thank you. As always, it's just gone 8 o'clock. I'm Howard Feldman. That was Rolene Marks with the Israel Report.